Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
John Murphy, Steve Tasker, joined on the line by NFL insider Field Yates of ESPN, the host of the Fantasy Football Focus podcast. Fantasy Focus Football podcast. I get that wrong every week. Field, thanks for joining us. How are you doing? Good to have you with us.
Good to be with you guys, as always. Tongue twister, that much is for sure. And before we begin, was either one of you the responsible party for not making Derek Jeter a unanimous Hall of Famer into the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Not me. It wasn't me. Do you think the guy did it for a reason, hoping it gets found out later on?
I tell you, I tweeted this last night. Baseball Twitter got to the bottom of the Astros trash can banging scandal. They're going to find a way to figure out who did not vote for Derek Jeter into the Hall of Fame this year, and it is not going to end pretty for that individual. I don't want to rob the moment of Derek Jeter and Larry Walker being inducted into the Hall of Fame, but certainly that one stuck out like a sore thumb. Yeah. One out of 397 votes cast, not for Derek Jeter.
Probably some Boston guy. I'm just kidding.
Could be.
Might be.
Hey, Phil, before we get on to more pressing matters, I want to take you back a little bit to the NFC Championship game on Sunday. Steve and I were talking about the game today. I was a little disappointed. I thought the Green Bay Packers did not come out really intense and really fired up to play. And then Matt LaFleur today talks about how his team did not play with its hair on fire against, those are his words, against the Niners. Did you see that game that way? Did you think there was a lack of intensity on the part of the Packers in that game?
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes that's a kind of comment you can make when you're looking back on the game and they just got smothered by 17 points. But when the head coach confirms it in his season-ending press conference 3 days after the game, you have to feel like what your eyes were telling you was accurate. And the Packers were going to have to play basically perfect football to beat the 49ers on the road last week. But they came on the opposite end of the spectrum of that. And I was actually surprised the team did not go for it on the opening drive when they had a fourth and short, I believe it was fourth and one on about the 50-yard line. That's the kind of play that if you execute it and you execute successfully, it can create that emotion and that fire that you're referring to right now. I'm not saying the game was lost right there on that decision, but that would have been something that could have kickstarted the Packers, and instead it was the sign of a sleepy day from the Packers basically all the way around.
Yeah, and where do you put that responsibility? Murph and I earlier in the show in the last segment were saying, yeah, that's kind of the head coach's job to set the tempo emotionally for his team, and, you know, and I get it, he's a first-year head coach, so maybe it's one of the hard lessons he had to learn, but don't you try to lay that at the feet of the rookie head coach?
Well, no question that decision to not go for it on fourth down is that of Matt LaFleur. And I understand the thought process of why you punt the ball. It's let's play the field position game. And at that point, you had just stopped the 49ers on a three and out. But yeah, the emotional energy, it seemed like he was more concerned with the defensive effort than the offensive effort. And whether that's a reflection of the work of Mike Pettine, their defensive coordinator, who, oh, by the way, Matt LaFleur did not commit to for next year, during his season-ending press conference, if you want to read between the tea leaves there about what that might mean. But, yeah, it was it's hard for me to say that it's just one person's responsibility or it's just one side of the ball's fault more than the other, because they got flattened 37-20. And usually when you're talking about a 17-point game, you know it's not close. That one was even, like, if it's possible for a game to not be as close as a score would indicate and it's still a 17-point game, that would be the example of it.
Yeah, and I'm discouraged to read that he's leaving Mike Pettine. He's hanging him out to dry right now. I don't know where you go with that. Does he bring him back now? I mean, he's kind of, you know, let him twist in the wind this week, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't have any reporting or any information about who he might have on his radar if it's not Mike Pettine. That kind of comment is just going to open up a lot of interpretation, or is going to be left open for interpretation. People are going to say, all right, well, are we going to expect an announcement of a new Packers defensive coordinator in the coming days? I mean, this is just dot connecting, nothing more than that. But Wade Phillips happened to be the defensive coordinator when Matt LaFleur was with the Los Angeles Rams a couple of years ago. Wade also happens to be available right now. And Wade, I think, still has a handful of teams left before he's coached for every organization in the NFL. So it feels like he's got to get up there to Green Bay for at least 1 year to try to close that circle. No, more seriously, if he does make a move from Mike Pettine, I would have described it as a move away from Mike Pettine. I would have described that yesterday as a surprise. Now I would not describe it as a surprise based off how he spoke earlier today.
What do you think about this 49er defense? And you know, I know that you, I agree with you that Green Bay really had to play mistake free to win that game. Their margin of error was far less than the Niners, but that San Francisco defense, can they make Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs look as bad as they made Aaron Rodgers and the Packers look?
I don't know about that bad, but I think they can certainly stall them out. And I don't know if you guys feel exactly the same way or not, but this Chiefs offense feels about as explosive to me as any offense we've seen since the 2007 Patriots, when they went 16-0 during the regular season, or at least it's in that neighborhood. I know there have been higher scoring offenses since then. Heck, the Chiefs scored more points last year, but still, this offense right now is so, so good. I wonder if, you know, what the Patriots fell victim to in the Super Bowl was the Giants' ability to rush with four men and make Tom Brady uncomfortable. And that's going to be the 49ers' recipe in 11 days, is can we get to Patrick Mahomes consistently with four rushers? And if there's any team in the NFL that can do it, I think it's them. I really do. I think they're the best equipped defense to make Patrick Mahomes not look like a mortal, but at least look like less of a football god than he has over the past 2 weeks in the playoffs, because he has been remarkable. He's done it with his arm, obviously. And then, as we saw last week, in perfect timing with this clip for those that are watching live, is he's running the football so capably. And he may not be as electric as Lamar Jackson or some of the other quarterbacks that are runners in this league, but he's so functional athletically. He's so good in open space. And he's 230, 240 pounds. He's a hard guy to bring down.
We're live with Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, kind of previewing the Super Bowl, which is next week in Miami. Hey, Field, tight ends are going to play a major role in this game, right? Kittle for the Niners and Kelce for the Chiefs. First Super Bowl to feature two tight ends each with 1,000 or more receiving yards. I don't know if that's a trend in the league, but it's certainly notable for this game, I think, huh?
Yeah, it is, and I don't know that we've seen players in recent weeks. So last week, Travis Kelce was relatively quiet. I believe it was 3 catches for 30 yards. George Kittle had 1 catch, and yet they were still two of the most important players on the field in the AFC and NFC championship games. They are matchup nightmares in the passing game. And George Kittle, I mean, he's like Lee Smith, right? Like an offensive tackle blocking. He's so, so powerful and physical and explosive at the point of attack. He's a Swiss Army knife for San Francisco because he's powerful enough to handle edge players at the line of scrimmage, but he's athletic enough that he can get out in space and be a blocker at the second or third level. And whereas some tight ends and wide receivers block because they have to, this guy loves it. I mean, it's obvious. We've seen enough mic'd up clips to realize that George Kittle blocks with bad intentions. He wants to embarrass you. He wants to flatten you. And then the next play, he wants to get up and embarrass and flatten you again. Really a fun player to watch.
Yeah, and we kind of knew about Kittle and how good he was coming into this game. One guy that people didn't know about was Mostert, a guy who bounced around everywhere and was on 6 teams and was released and kind of hung in there. And all of a sudden he gets this opportunity with a team like San Francisco. And yeah, the guy takes over the game virtually. I mean, that. What are your thoughts about where he's going to fall in this Super Bowl 54?
Well, it looks like, yeah, he might be the only running back that the 49ers can truly rely upon, because it sounds like Tevin Coleman is iffy at best after dislocating his shoulder. Matt Breida's had a little bit of a fumbling issue of late. He's so fast and so good in the open field when he gets there. And Jeff Wilson's been solid in the red zone for them, but Mostert looks to me like the most important piece of the running game right now amongst the backs. He's incredibly powerful, and the guy looks, I mean, if you just see him, you can see his clips right now. The guy is cut up. He's huge, explosive. He's powerful. And if you recall, prior to this year, the 49ers re-signed him to a three-year deal worth $9 million, and it basically had nothing to do with his running ability. It was because he was this incredible special teams player, one of the best coverage players in the NFL, and you know, maybe Buffalo fans are used to what that looks like when a guy like Lorenzo Alexander goes from being a special team star to a offensive or defensive stalwart. That's kind of what Raheem Mostert has become for San Francisco. No longer playing on special teams because he's too valuable in offense for them.
Field Yates, our guest from ESPN. He's the NFL insider from ESPN. Got next week to talk about the Super Bowl some more, Field, but a couple of issues I want to deal with you right now. This week, the Senior Bowl is going on down in Mobile, Alabama. You know, look, we know the underclassmen don't go, so the premium picks are not in Mobile this week. So how important is the Senior Bowl to for scouts to evaluate the talent when you know that these are not the premium picks really on hand there in Mobile?
Yeah, really, really, really important, and also incredibly important for coaches. A lot of these players, whether they're the best, whether they're second tier, no matter where you size them up to be, scouts have had the chance to see almost all of them at a practice, and probably live in games too. They do all these school visits, they go and they have their time visiting them and interviewing them, and all of these opportunities for exposure. Coaches are, in a lot of cases, just picking up the scouting trail for the year. Right now, this is their first exposure to a lot of these guys. And it's one thing to see a guy on film, but there is something to be gleaned from seeing a player in person or seeing a group of players in person, seeing them perform, seeing what they really move like, what they really look like, how they handle against better competition, how they interact with teammates, how coachable they are, how quickly they learn new concepts. Not that we're, you know, throwing every angle of the playbook up against these players this week, but, you know, there is something to be said for installing a playbook to work with come Saturday. So I think it's really, really important for coaches, really, really important for scouts. It's no mystery that, you know, almost every team is incredibly well represented there, and that's by design.
I was thinking about this. One of next week's Super Bowl quarterbacks, Jimmy Garoppolo, sort of made his mark at the Pro Bowl. He came directly, I believe, 4 or 5 years ago from the other Pro Bowl type game, or the Senior Bowl, from the East-West Shrine game. He played so well that he went to the Senior Bowl in the very next week.
The great lesson for these quarterbacks that are not players like Tua Tagovailoa or Joe Burrow, or even Justin Herbert, who is out of Oregon and regarded by some as a first-round lock. It's just a matter of where he falls in the first round. But some of these guys that are on the periphery right now, Jordan Love, Utah State, an example of a quarterback who could earn a lot of stock this week. Not saying he's guaranteeing himself, you know, a first-round pick if he performs well, but Utah State, he's had some exposure to big-time competition. Utah State did play against LSU this year, and they were obviously the national champion and a great, great team. But it's an opportunity for guys like that to make their mark against better competition. Someone like Jalen Hurts from Alabama and Oklahoma. There are teams that are wondering just how precise of a passer he is. Is he somebody that needs to consider a Taysom Hill-like career arc where you can play some quarterback, but you're athletic enough, powerful enough, and willing enough to play other spots as well? This week is an incredibly important one for prospects that don't play every Saturday on national television, because the Super Bowl is a great example, to your point, about how it's not just guys that we all knew coming out. It's players that I don't even know if people know where Jimmy Garoppolo went to college. Eastern Illinois, but they may not know much more about the program other than the fact that it's located in Eastern Illinois.
Right. One of the I want to ask you, too, that we've been talking about this wide receiver class. You had a tweet earlier in the week about the last 5 years and the rookies who have led the rookie class in the last 5 years and how what their yardage numbers were. There's only 3 out of the 5 that actually reached 1,000 yards. Is it tougher for a wide receiver to make the transition from college to the pros than any other position?
I think so. I think it's right up there, and I've heard a lot of smart coaches talk about this, and part of the reason why is the kinds of responsibilities that receivers have at the college level versus the pro level. I think Kyle Shanahan had a really enlightening quote about it not that long ago. And it's just defensively, you're playing different things in college. You're running different route concepts. Your responsibilities are different at the college level. And even the more advanced players in some cases, some of it's just they're more athletic than other players, right? I mean, sometimes you have a guy like Corey Davis, who I still think can be a pretty reasonable player in this league. He went fifth overall for the Titans in 2017 after playing at Western Michigan. He was just a better athlete than everybody else on the field every single weekend when he played. And he's had some bright moments in the NFL, but it hasn't always translated. I think that it's a difficult position to make the leap from. I suppose quarterback's probably always going to be the most difficult one, but wide receiver is right up there. There are so many nuances to the game at the pro level that guys just aren't previously exposed to.
Hey, Field, a couple of other issues today. The Jaguars look like they're going to hire former Redskins coach Jay Gruden as offensive coordinator. What's the chance Doug Marrone is getting close to hiring his eventual successor as head coach there?
It's one of those where when that happens, you kind of say to yourself, like, is he doing this or is the organization making right. him do this? Don't know the answer for sure. I don't know the answer for sure. I will say that because it kind of goes, it cuts both ways. On the one hand, when you hire a guy as qualified as great Jay Gruden in the sense that he's already been an NFL head coach and guided some successful offenses, it's, hey, that's great because we need to win next year. Doug Marrone almost got canned this year. I mean, the team made it clear they had a. Anytime you're announcing that the coach is staying, it means the coach was under evaluation, right? The Bills didn't come out after the season and say, hey, news, Sean McDermott's staying. No, the guy's a stud. Obviously, he's not going anywhere. The Jaguars had to come out and release a statement and say, hey, Doug Marrone is sticking around for 2020. So on the one hand, he's coaching for his life this year. On the other hand, you know, if things go amiss week 7 and they're 1-5, then you might have an obvious replacement right there waiting for you because it's a guy that you hired. So I suppose there's definitely a double-edged sword aspect to this. I think Doug Marrone's focus, though, is going to be, hey, we needed somebody to get this offense right. We've got a huge quarterback decision to make this offseason, and Jay was one of the best minds available.
Well, one of the other things that happened is, you know, one of the most biggest rivalries in sports is the New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys. And it looks like the Dallas Cowboys head coach from this last year may become the offensive coordinator of those Giants. What are your thoughts about Jason Garrett going to New York and calling the plays?
You know, I will say this. Jason Garrett could have easily spent this year away from football. He could have probably retired, to be honest with you. Played the NFL, made a decent amount of money as a backup quarterback. He's been coaching the Cowboys for about a decade. Obviously, you don't earn money on the cheap for Dallas. You make good money as their head coach. He probably could have walked away and never been a part of a team again and just lived his life. And he chose to become an offensive coordinator, which I think is a reflection of the passion he has for the game of football. And it's a result oriented business. I am so mindful of that because we see head coaches get fired every year, and usually it's between 5 and 8 of them. But Jason Garrett's a man of high character, and I think this would be a good fit for him. A good opportunity to develop a quarterback, do a little bit more game planning and things of that nature. They had Kellen Moore last year, but they've had a lot of offensive minds, Scott Linehan prior to that, others who have sort of handled the offensive coordinator duties while Jason Garrett was the head coach. So I'm actually a fan of the decision to hire him by Joe Judge, the Giants' new head coach, who gives them another mind that's had head coaching experience. I mean, think about what Sean McDermott did when he brought aboard Leslie Frazier, a former NFL head coach himself, and Sean's more than capable of running a defense, but it also allows him to be the head coach and not have to worry about the defense on some days. That's Leslie. Leslie is more than capable of running that, and I think it's a good sign for Joe Judge that he's already identifying the importance of former head coaches.
Hey, Phil, before we let you go, let me get you involved in our Twitter poll today because you might have some thoughts on this. The Bills obviously looking at everybody at the Senior Bowl this week, and they'll do all of their personnel evaluations. We think they probably need a wide receiver. What's the best way to find a wide receiver? Is it round one of the draft? One of the later rounds in the draft, is it free agency or a trade? And I mean this year more than anything, not just, you know, in general. But this year, what's the best way to add a wide receiver to your roster?
I think it's the first round of the draft for the Bills. And I know I just spoke about how difficult it is to transition, but the team just allocated 2 significant contracts last year to Smokey Brown and Cole Beasley. And there's no buyer's remorse there. Both guys were really good. That's a lot of money. I believe if I do the math offhand, it's like $16 million a season now for those two guys. They're going to have to pay some players of their own this offseason. We've already been talking about that. Guys are going to do it for major, major raises. I think this first round, though, is deep enough, and the Bills are adept enough at figuring out what kind of player they need. And I'm making it simple, but it feels like one wide receiver with size would go a long way for Buffalo because they've got the speed in John Brown. They've got the slot option in Cole Beasley. And maybe one more perimeter wideout would really make a difference for Josh Allen in his third season.
With this year's class, could they wait second, third round maybe to get an adequate guy there?
Yeah, if the board does not fall in their favor, they could. I mean, it's what, you know, they could. It could go two ways, right? It could be that a Jerry Jeudy from Alabama slips uncharacteristically. And before people tell me there's no way that happens, Calvin Ridley slid to like pick 24 a couple of years ago, and he was a phenomenal player at Alabama. So you could have luck in your favor where a guy falls, or if the run comes early, you say to yourself, all right, well, let's take best available, and then a second-round wide receiver could be more than a sufficient option.
Thanks, right, Field.
Field, thank you very much.
As always, guys, looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Yep. Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider. I'm with us every Wednesday. You'll be back with us next Wednesday. It's a good answer. You know, if you want the right wide receiver, maybe the draft falls a certain way that you can wait till second and third round, which would be my optimal. I just think there's so many good receivers, you could probably wait, but maybe not. Maybe you got to jump on somebody in the first round. And we're talking about 22 in the first round, you know, the 22nd pick, as opposed to what, the 54th in the right. second round? It's a big jump. That's a big difference.
You run the risk of, you know, if you've got a guy that you really like, and even if everybody else has him pegged as the fourth best guy, that's when you do trade back and you take the chance that he's going to be there when you pick, because those other, you know, three guys are going to get picked before him. But you always run the risk that somebody's going to say, you know what, I like that guy, and they're going to take him ahead of you, and then you lose out on your guy. So you have a number of guys that you can grab and say, we're going to be happy with this guy, or this guy, but here's the order in which we like them. That's the way you got to play the draft. You got to stay flexible enough to say you believe he's going to be there when you pick next or further down the line, and then you pick somebody else who may not be. They have traded down and then traded back up, you know, and you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. they've done all of this stuff in the past, and they've been pretty successful at doing it. So I would imagine it may happen again this year. They may trade out of the 22, either go higher or lower, if they really think, and it might be a tip-off as to what they think. Is the guy so good, we've got to make sure we get him and go up in the first round to get him? Or do we jump up in the first round because we think the guy we like will make that big a difference for our offense? It could be both things as well. But I think it'll tip their opinion of the guys if they sit right where they're at. We may not find out how much they really, really do like him.
Yeah. Anyway, Chris Brown is down there in Mobile. He's taking a look at all this wide receiver talent, and we'll get Chris's thoughts on that, plus other Senior Bowl issues when we return. Come on back for that. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health, live from the Seneca Studio. Seneca Resorts and Casino, nothing comes close.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome back to the show. One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, coming here from our Seneca studio in Orchard Park. Joined on the line right now live by our man at the Senior Bowl, Chris Brown, joins us live from Mobile, Alabama. He's at Ladd Peebles Stadium in Mobile. What are you, between practices, north and south at this point, Chris? What's going on there?
No, north is just getting started here, guys. We're an hour behind you fellas, so they're going to go for 2 hours with each practice today. It was just an hour and a half yesterday, but north was the second team on the field yesterday. They're the first team on the field today, and then the south team will follow later this afternoon.
It looks cold down there, Chris. Is it pretty chilly?
Better today. Yesterday was wrong. It was cold. I had my winter hat on. The wind was blowing. We were freezing out here. I was sitting next to Bills receivers coach Chad Hall at practice yesterday. And the poor man was unprepared. He had a hoodie on, and he was freezing. So he was just sitting next to me groaning as he was watching receivers, partially because of the cold and partially because he was a little disappointed in what he was watching.
Well, we heard a little of some of the sound bites from Brandon Bean. What are your thoughts on what he had to say yesterday?
Arm, 35 and 40.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brandon wasn't asked too specifically about players. I don't think he wants to give away the farm about what the team thinks, but he did admit that this receiver class is pretty deep. And I would say it's probably one of the position groups here at the Senior Bowl that offers the most depth in talent. And this North team in particular, guys, offers a lot of size wide receivers just on this North roster alone. There are others on the South roster. You know, on this North roster alone, you've got the kid from Southern Cal, Michael Pittman Jr., the wide receiver who goes about 6'5", a little spindly looking, a little slighter frame than I anticipated he would be. And then you've got Antonio Randy Golden, the Liberty receiver who's, you know, coming from a smaller program but has three consecutive 1,000-yard receiving seasons, including 1,300 yards last year. And then you've got the other kid from Notre Dame, Chase Claypool, who's probably the most physically imposing body type out here and made some plays yesterday in the North practice.
Chris, two things. First of all, tell that public address announcer to keep it down. Secondly, is it fair to say that, I heard Brandon Bean say yesterday that they're going to meet with wide receivers in meeting rooms last night. Was it exclusively wide receivers last night for the Bills?
Yeah, I mean, they were on the list. I'm not going to be able to give you names as to who they did meet with, but I know they were on the list to meet with some of those. And it's a different setup here. They don't have a limit on how many players they can sit down and speak with. There's a 60-player limit at the combine just due to time constraints more than anything else. Here, it's a little more loose and wide open. You can tell any player you want, hey, we want to meet with you. We'd like to do it around this time, and then do your best. And there's no time limit on how long you can meet with said player. There's a 15-minute limit, as you guys know, at the combine. Here, you want to meet with a guy for 10 minutes? Fine. You want to meet with a guy for 25 minutes? That's okay, too. And I think there's an element here that goes somewhat unnoticed. A lot of NFL clubs meet with some of these players, which, you know, as you guys know, is on the heels of the December personnel meetings when they first put their senior reports to bed after scouting the entire college season. They get a preliminary board done. But there are also some players that, you know, they're not necessarily sure about. They haven't met with them face-to-face. This is the first opportunity to do that here. Some players are either kept in the conversation as far as that respective team's draft board goes. Some players here at the Senior Bowl are effectively eliminated from some teams' boards as well, which is maybe a little bit more unknown than it is for the average fan.
One of the things that happened, I mean, the Bills have drafted this regime seven guys from this week's Senior Bowl. I mean, over the course of the last couple of years, they've gotten a handful, more than a handful of players who are contributors to this team that went 10-6. Is there that kind of thought process headed into this one, that they're going to get that big a contribution from this possible draft class at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I know Brandon Bean was a little disappointed at some of the bigger names that dropped out of the Senior Bowl in the 11th hour here. The South Carolina wide receiver, Brian Edwards, who's a guy I liked a lot just from watching some of his college games. He was a last-minute subtraction. That was done on Monday, I believe. And then yesterday, literally hours before the first practice, a player that's considered the best cornerback here, or was considered the best cornerback here, LSU's Christian Fulton, and some people consider him the second-best corner in the entire draft behind the Ohio State kid, Jeff Okuda. he dropped out for whatever reason. We never really got an official reason as to why he withdrew from the Senior Bowl here. So the talent pool has been hurt a little bit by some 11th hour dropouts. But I think there's definitely some receiver depth here that they're going to be taking a long look at. I think there's some offensive line talent here that they'll be looking at. I don't know if it's necessarily guys day one talent, but maybe late day two, early day three type talent. As Brandon Bean said yesterday to us guys, we want to hit on the fourth round pick just as much as we do on the first round.
With Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Chris, you look at the Bills draft and you see, you know, nine picks, but what, two in the fifth round, three in the sixth round. I thought you had a very good question for Brandon Bean yesterday, and he had a pretty good answer about how maybe you turned that into something besides draft picks on that Saturday of draft weekend, right?
Yeah, I think the whole genesis of that question for Brandon was coming from the fact that, I mean, you look at the camp, training camp last year, guys, it was hard to make that roster last year. And now, you know, the construction of the roster and the decisions that they've made, another good draft class that came in last year that made contributions, and for the foreseeable future, you'd expect most of those guys to remain on the roster. It's going to be an even harder roster to make in training camp this coming summer. And so when you're armed with nine draft picks, I think as a general manager, you have to ask yourself, honestly, is the kid I take in the fifth or sixth round even going to make our roster? And if you're not so sure that's going to happen, maybe you make a more aggressive move in the draft, trade some of that draft capital to move up somewhere in the early rounds to get a real premium talent. Or if you can't do that, or you're not in a position to do that, maybe you trade the current draft assets for future draft assets.
Well, that's what I'm going to ask you. What's your over-under? I mean, if you're going to think about doing that, and I agree with you, I think it's the thing to do, particularly with the roster and its current construction. What's your over-under for how many players the Bills actually walk away from this draft with?
Over-under, I'd say six and a half, somewhere in there. I don't see them using nine picks this year, guys, because I don't see nine players making this roster, especially knowing the bulk of the extra picks that the Bills have are on day three. So I can't see them holding on to all of those unless they feel it is so uncommonly deep at a certain position or two that they say, oh, you know what, we could still get some guy that can make our roster here in the fifth round, but I just don't see that.
Chris Brown is with us. Hey, Chris, a couple of other things that Brandon Bean mentioned yesterday. We're, 3 months until the draft, first day of the draft, but less than two months away from the start of free agency. And I was encouraged to hear that he's made some preliminary inquiries to some of Buffalo's own free agents, trying to get them re-signed before they hit the open market, huh?
Yeah, he admitted that, you know, preliminary talks with the agents for their, you know, impending unrestricted free agents has begun. He wasn't giving us any names as to who they've been in contact with to this point. But I think it's pretty safe to say that some of the guys at the top of the list are probably Shaq Lawson, Jordan Phillips, and Kevin Johnson, among others. So where it goes, I think, is totally up to the desires of those players to test their market value on the open market. And Brandon Bean was quick to say, look, if we don't get one or two or three of these guys that we want back re-signed in short order, it doesn't mean that's it, it's over, and they're gone. And I pointed out in the story I put up on BuffaloBills.com yesterday, last year when Jordan Phillips was a free agent, after coming in here for the second half of the 2018 season and kind of giving a boost to that defensive line, he didn't get re-signed by the Bills until March 5th. It was like less than 10 days before the opening of the free agent market. So, you know, I think the Bills have shown in this tenure of, you know, Bean and McDermott that they'll take as long as they need to, or give a player as long as they feel they need to, properly assess their market value. And then if they present them something that's good enough for them to go with, you know, he said they'll be back, simply put.
If we know that the wide receiver is kind of at the front of the stove, and that's kind of what they've got on their plate to begin with, what's the second most important position group that you think they'll address?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are arguments to be made for a premium pass rushing defensive end. And there's that talent in this draft for sure. How deep it goes, I think, is in the eye of the beholder in terms of people that can help you right away. And that was another question I asked Brandon Bean, guys, was, does your valuation of prospects change because of the state of your roster and where it is. You're a playoff team now. You're not really reconstructing. You're adding bits and pieces to make it an even more formidable playoff contender. And so with that in mind, do you maybe lean, we have maybe two prospects on the board, do you lean more towards the guy who's more NFL ready but may not have quite as high a ceiling as maybe the other guy you're considering, so he can push your team forward in 2020, not in 2022? And he to consider that. But I think offensive line is something they're still going to take a look at, guys. Quinton Spain is a free agent. Do you want to move Cody Ford into guard? Do you need an offensive tackle? Ty Nsekhe will be in the last year of his contract. If Deion Dawkins doesn't get done with an extension this offseason, he'll be entering the last year of his rookie contract. And as a GM, you always got to think a year ahead, so the holes are ready to be filled. You're not looking to fill them by trying to find somebody on the open market or in the draft. So I think offensive line is an area they'll be looking at. And, you know, I think you still have to look at defensive line help as well. As I mentioned, defensive end, probably the primary thing, with Jerry Hughes entering the last year of his deal, or the second to last year of his deal, because I initially thought they tore it up and wrote a whole new two-year deal, but I think his two-year extension starts this offseason. And then Trent Murphy is in the last year of his contract, and as we know, Shaq Lawson's a free agent. So there are some potential holes that could be opening up there as well.
Chris, any truth to the rumor that you basically dined yesterday on Reese's Peanut Butter Cups? You did not get into your meal allotment yesterday. Is that true? That's what we heard.
That is 100% true for lunch.
Oh, for lunch.
It is not true for dinner, though.
Okay.
So, yeah, we went – well, they had media access late in the morning, one team after the other, and then a half hour later, practice starts at a completely different location. So, I mean, there's not even time to grab and go. You just got to get your work done over there, jump in the car, and then come over here for practice. So, fortunately, I scarfed a handful of peanut butter cups at the hotel, and that served as lunch. Okay. Five of them did the job, though. I was pretty happy with them.
Last thing from me, Chris. How likely or probable or effective would it be if the Bills took more than one wideout in this draft?
How likely is it? I think there's a distinct possibility if they don't add one in free agency. I think if they add one in free agency, you're probably looking at one in the draft. If they don't, then yeah, I think with nine picks, that'll probably be reduced to six or seven. It's possible that you could get two receivers out of this draft, but I'm not 100% convinced they don't look for a veteran first, even as thin as that wide receiver pool looks to be on the free agent market.
Chris, thanks for this. We'll talk. Have a safe trip.
All right, take care, guys.
Chris Brown's joining us from Mobile, Alabama. He's right in Ladd Peebles Stadium, where I think you said the North is practicing now, the North team in the Senior Bowl, which is coming up on Saturday. Practices yesterday, today, and tomorrow in Mobile.
Sure, the PA announcer shuts
up. Come on, man.
Come on, we're live here, pal. Let's go.
Don't ask for much. No, they're great. Great people. All right, we're going to take a break. We're coming back with more. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from the Seneca Studio in Orchard Park. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to
to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
One Does Live, I'm John Murphy with Steve Tasker. We're here until 3 o'clock. Coming up at 2, Brett Gagnon from Bleacher Report, NFL writer from Bleacher Report, joins us. We're talking about the Senior Bowl. Just got done talking to Chris Brown about it. Want to hear from you. So if the Bills are to get a wide receiver this year, how do they do it? Let's take a look at our Twitter poll. It's been up for a couple of hours now. What's the best way for the Bills to find a wide receiver this year? Is it, in fact, first round of the draft? Well, 42% of you say, yes, that's the way to go. Is it a second rounder later in the draft? 32% say that's the way. Is it free agency? 17% say that's the way. Is it a trade? 8% say that's the way to get involved in the draft and get a wide receiver in the draft. What do you think? Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What do you think the best way is for the Bills to get a receiver in the draft? Let's go to the tweet sheet. Let's hear what the people say, Steve. Let's hear the voice of the people.
The voice of the people.
The tweet sheet is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills.
Right,
take it away, Stevie.
We'll start with Tiffany. She says, evaluating wide receiver talent can be more miss than hit. I would use later round draft pick to take a shot on a guy that fits the type of receiver you covet. They need to fit your offensive scheme and with your quarterback's skill set. Your quarterback will likely determine the success of your receivers. I agree 100% with that last line as well. I've said it from day one. Bills Fan 365 says, when you decide to wait on the guy you want, you will end up chasing his replacement for the rest of the draft. Bills need to get their guy with their first pick in this draft. Don't mess around and miss on your wide receiver. That's how 5-11 seasons happen.
I don't know what he means by that. You will end up chasing his replacement for the rest of the draft.
I think his point is do whatever it takes to get the guy you know you want. I agree.
So is he saying when you decide to wait on the guy you want, you won't get him and you'll have to
find they think you're going to get him in the second round rather than the first round?
Yeah.
You're going to miss him, and then you're going to chase some guy who's not as good. I think that's his point.
I'm not sure about that. I'm taking a guess. Okay. Seth tweets this in. What's the best way for the Bills to find a wide receiver? He says, just go and get one of these proven 6'4 dudes. Makes it sound simple. I wish it were that simple. Seth continues, as long as they fit the DNA. Don't need any divas in Buffalo. Wouldn't mind the kid from USC either. Michael Pittman Jr. could be the next Robert Woods, if not better. Might slip to second or third with all the wide receiver depth this year.
Well, that's the game they're going to play, and it really is. It's a board game, literally. You have to wonder what other teams are thinking about the same guys you're evaluating. And if you think that guy you want is going to be there at the second pick or the third pick because you think you know what other teams think of players, you got to be willing to do it because that's the only way to get the most value out of the 9 picks the Bills have. And if you think he's not going to be there at 22 or 54 where the Bills pick in the first 2 rounds or whatever round you're talking about, you got to be willing to bundle some stuff up, trade it to another team and get up to where you know you can get him. But it literally is a board game where you're bluffing your way through it to get the guy you want for the least possible assets you have to give up to get him, whether it be a draft pick or draft picks or players or cash or whatever it is. That's what this whole draft process is going to be. And with this many receivers in it, it adds a real high level of difficulty towards discerning who everybody likes and who they don't like. So I think for the Bills, you know, we always talk about their mock drafts that they do, and Brandon Bean gives one guy a couple of teams he wants to be like know mm-hmm. about, and then another guy another couple of teams, and they all draft through this process. It's going to be a really difficult year for that for the Bills, picking where they pick, and with the depth of wide receiver, a position they kind of feel like they need to get in this draft. I think it's really going to be difficult to prognosticate what everybody else is going to do.
Another outcome of being a decent team, a good team, because you could go into draft in the last couple of years and say, well, if you don't get this guy, if the Chiefs take this guy, we'll settle for this guy because he's good and we have a need there. No, the needs are narrowed down for the Bills. You don't want to miss the guy that you really want, and you might not have a viable option.
It's a good way to look at it. Do they become more valuable because you need them less? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're the things that you really
it's a funny
think,
way to put it, but
the,
I think there's
the
some
tangible
truth to
ways
that.
This team can improve. You can say edge rusher, wide receiver, maybe depth or dependable offensive line, whatever. Because you have so few picks, and those are really the only, you know, that's you're not, you know, you're this isn't a house, this isn't a yard sale, and you're set, you know. Does it give you more assets to just go get the one or two pieces? Do you come out of this draft with just four players and you trade everything else so you can trade into the from the 22nd pick up inside the top 15 and then inside the top 25 and then take your other picks where they come, you know, without the last two, five, or last five picks of the last fifth and sixth round? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So do you get come out of this with just four picks of guys that you really know can play for you? It's a different philosophy, no yep. question.
Tim Funk tweets this in. We answer the question, what's the best way for the Bills to find a wide receiver? Tim Funk says, I'd go after Chiefs wide receiver DeMarcus Robinson in free agency and then see what rounds 2 to 4 have to offer. Robinson has the potential to be a number one wide receiver. Okay. I did. He did catch my eye the other day, and I thought that could be a guy. Does he have potential to be, you know, we're back to number one. He's a number one. I don't know what that means.
Is he the guy that dropped three passes in the first quarter? He is, isn't he?
That might be why he caught my eye. No, I think he's a good player, the three drops notwithstanding. From Nikki, I think we can get the big physical wide receiver in round 2 or 3. Most of the wideouts projected to go early in round 1 are not the type we need, so we should be able to add a big target in the later rounds while saving our first round for a different need. Okay. Okay, that's a strategy, Nikki.
Here's, and let me give you – this is one philosophy that I've heard about the teams kind of have adopted about the draft. It's so difficult to evaluate the young players coming out of college. Now, teams are kind of getting better at it or what, you know, and all this stuff, and each draft is different because of the level of talent at different positions in the pool that are all picking from. But some people, some organizations think, listen, it's arrogant to think that you're going to pick better – than other teams pick, percentage-wise. Like, if you take a quarterback in the first round every year, it's a coin flip as to whether that guy will be successful. Same thing with all the other positions. There's a certain percentage of guys you can get it right with and a certain percentage of guys you can't get it right with. So everybody drafts, and the percentage of guys they hit on and the percentage of guys they miss on is kind of the same, although it varies from year to year. But overall, long-term, every team drafts the same percentage of great players that every other team does because of the cyclical nature of where you pick and your evaluation process and the simple fact that you're picking from the same pool of players. Now, given that, do you take all 9 of your picks knowing that the percentages are there and the more picks you have, the more success you're going to have? Or do you have faith in this year with the depth of that position, do you say, no, we're going to go up and get a couple of guys at the same position. Then if we hit that percentage, one of them is going to be a really good player. But you lose all the chances to hit on one of the guys, the 6 guys in the later rounds, you know, the 5th and the 6th round. So that's the philosophical challenge you've got to address as this thing goes forward as well.
Yep.
The more chances you take, the more chances you have to get it right. But yeah. The higher those picks sure. are, the higher the percentages that you do get it right. I don't know.
Tough one. Oof. Got a break coming up here, and then we're going to be joined by Brad Gagnon from Bleacher Report, contributor to The Comeback, Pro Football Writers of America member. We'll talk with him about the Super Bowl, a little bit about the Senior Bowl as well. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Buffalo from our Seneca studio at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.